Today is Monday, June 3rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, Republican concerns over President Trump's threats to put tariffs on Mexico.
He's been known to play with fire, but not live hand grenades. And if he slaps a 25% tariff on Mexico, it's going to tank the American economy.
On the anniversary of a massive use of deadly force on protesters, a rare acknowledgement by China. Also ahead, the pioneer of psychedelic rock has died. It's all on today's International Edition. The so-called special relationship between the United States and Britain will be in focus during President Donald Trump's state visit beginning June 3rd amid the planned anti-Trump protests and controversies about his statements on British politics. How do the Brits feel about their relations with Americans? White House correspondent Patsy Wittakuswara brings us this report from London.
London is gearing up for U.S. President Donald Trump's state visit beginning June 3rd. He's a controversial figure here. Polls show that the majority of the British public disapprove of him.
I think everything about him is awful. It really is.
Yeah.
He does. And he lies as well. He's very naughty.
How can a president that kind of behaves in the way he does and says the kind of things that he does, like, be allowed, like, into politics? It's just, I think it's ridiculous.
It's quite important that he does come here for US and UK relations. But due to the simple fact that America and the UK have such a great relationship.
Trump has drawn rebuke when he retweeted anti-Muslim videos from a British far-right group and when he accused British intelligence agencies of spying on his election campaign. Still, British officials maintain that the two countries' special relationship remain intact. Polls also show the underlying cultural closeness between the two countries is strong.
I'm not sure whether it's as strong, but yes, I do feel that it's still there.
If the general population want it, then it will still be there, regardless of who's in power, really.
It's one of the few relationships in the world history that won't really ever go away, because we've gone through the dark times and we've gone through the best of times.
The special relationship is a term coined after World War II by then-British Prime Minister Winston Churchill to describe the close political, cultural, economic, military, and historic bilateral ties.
Which really has been one of the most important successful relationships in history, going back really to the end of the 19th century. The U.S. and the U.K. have to some extent been bound at the hip ever since.
The closeness is sometimes reflected by the leaders, including Reagan and Thatcher, Bush and Blair, Obama and Cameron at certain times of their terms. It's a different story for Trump and Prime Minister Theresa May, especially after he publicly criticized her handling of Britain's exit from the European Union. But it's not just about the leaders.
It's more about the deeply buried relationship between the intelligence services, between the security services, the integration of the militaries, the British students studying in American universities, American film studios collaborating with British film studios and actors. Those kinds of things are the core of the special relationship.
Just like in Trump's 2018 visit, massive protests are planned, with organizers saying they expect tens of thousands to attend.
Other American presidents have also faced a rather chilly British reception. After placing nuclear missiles at military bases here, Ronald Reagan faced massive protests in 1982, as did George W. Bush after the 2003 Iraq invasion. So, like any other relationships, it too faces its ups and downs. Patsy Wittakuswara, VOA News, London.
Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the U.S. is willing to talk to Iran with no preconditions. The U.S. is now requiring social media details from most visa applicants. Federal Aviation Administration says some Boeing 737 MAX jets may have bad parts. And a center in Syria is seeking to de-radicalize ISIS teens. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. President Donald Trump said Sunday that America has had enough with Mexico, contending that it is an abuser of the United States by not stopping the surge of Central American migrants headed north to seek asylum in the U.S. Trump is threatening to impose a 5% tariff on Mexican exports sent to the U.S. by June 10th unless it blocks the migrants short of the U.S. border. He's also accusing Mexico of, quote, taking but never giving. Acting White House Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney told Fox News Sunday that illegal immigration comes with a hefty price tag.
American taxpayers are paying hundreds of billions of dollars for illegal immigrants. They're paying hundreds of billions of dollars for the drugs that come across the southern border. So there is already a cost associated with this that we are trying to get off of the backs of ordinary Americans.
But even some in his own Republican Party, like Senator John Kennedy, disagree with the idea of imposing a tariff on Mexico.
I'm not saying it won't work. President Lopez Obrador has already indicated that he's willing to talk. But I worry about the long-term ramifications.
Trump's attacks on Mexico came a day after Mexico's president suggested his country would clamp down on migration. Mexican Foreign Minister Marcelo Ebrard said he had spoken to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo by phone and said face-to-face talks between the two will take place Wednesday in Washington. On the congressional front, VOA's Michael Bowman reports that bipartisanship on possible immigration reform remains scarce and could be even harder to muster after a recent White House personnel announcement.
The Trump administration says migrant arrivals now top 100,000 a month, producing a staggering total since the start of the government's fiscal year last October.
As of April 30th, we apprehended 460,294 people on the southern border. Nearly half of the adults we apprehended in April brought children. They have received the message loud and clear: bring a child, you will be released.
President Donald Trump responded with a plan to tighten asylum standards and discourage border arrivals.
Legitimate asylum seekers are being displaced by those lodging frivolous claims.
Trump also wants to continue border wall construction and implement a so-called merit-based immigration system that prioritizes highly skilled newcomers. Democrats are not impressed.
Merit. It is really a condescending word. They're saying family is without merit.
He opts for a border wall, something that only serves to bolster his ego and irrevocably harm our border communities.
No plan can pass without bipartisan support in the politically divided Congress. Trump repeatedly has goaded Democrats on the issue.
Democrats are proposing open borders, lower wages, and frankly, lawless chaos.
And at political rallies, he speaks bluntly about newcomers to America.
Our country is full. We don't want people coming up here.
Trump recently named former Virginia State Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli as the White House's immigration czar or coordinator. Cuccinelli once argued police may check the immigration status of anyone they stop on the road.
Cuccinelli is a hardliner on immigration. He does share the president's points of view.
Democrats abhor Cuccinelli's unflinching advocacy of staunchly conservative views, potentially making it even harder for the administration to attract Democratic support for its immigration proposals, with Cuccinelli spearheading the effort. For now, few see any hope of bipartisan consensus on immigration.
I'd say the chances are less than zero, if that's possible.
We need the wall.
What makes it so tough is that it has become an ideological issue dividing the two parties.
We have a lot of disagreements here.
Trump talks about immigration as if it's going to ruin America. And there are other people who talk about immigration as absolutely the fundamental bedrock of America.
Some U.S. lawmakers are focused on addressing the immediate situation on the U.S.-Mexico border.
This is a crisis. It's going to get worse.
I encourage my colleagues to set aside their hatred for President Trump and work to address the crisis at the border.
Others want more encompassing legislation.
The smartest thing we could do would be actually do comprehensive immigration reform. And God willing, someday we'll get back and do that.
Contentious legislation rarely becomes law in an election year. With the 2020 campaigns already heating up, the window for action on immigration shrinks by the day. Michael Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
Since the first day Acting Defense Secretary Pat Shanahan took the reins at the Pentagon, he said his top concern is China, China, China. And in his first major appearance in Asia as the U.S. military's civilian chief, he didn't shy away from criticizing Beijing's bad behavior. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has more from Singapore.
Acting Defense Secretary Pat Shanahan was all smiles ahead of a meeting with his Chinese counterpart that focused on building relations. But speaking to an audience at the annual Shangri-La Defense Forum, Shanahan said the U.S. would not ignore Chinese behavior, which he says has threatened prosperity in the region.
It's not about conflict. It's not about building walls. This is about security.
China is infamous for its theft of other nations' military and civilian technology.
I don't like when intellectual property is stolen. We have real issues with intellectual property theft, cyber attacks. There's a host of issues that we have to address.
Experts say China has used this theft to narrow the gap between some critical American and Chinese military abilities. Michael O'Hanlon is a defense analyst with the Brookings Institution.
The kind of advantage that we had against China in the Western Pacific during the Cold War is gone for good.
And China has continued to project more military power beyond its borders, most notably by constructing artificial islands in the South China Sea and placing heavy weapons on them to support territorial claims not recognized under international law.
They argue that it's defensive. It looks like it's a bit overkill.
Recently, the U.S. has pushed for more international patrols in the South China Sea, including one last month with Japan, India, and the Philippines. Bradley Bowman is with the Foundation for Defense of Democracies.
I think we need to do more of that because I think we need to characterize this conflict for what it is. It's not a conflict between China and the U.S. It's a conflict between China and the world.
U.S. allies here in Singapore were increasingly anxious over rising tensions between the two powers. And as one leader pointed out, many believe China and the U.S. need to work together, or they risk upending the global system. Carla Babb, VOA News, Singapore.
Well, China on Sunday defended its deadly crackdown 30 years ago on pro-democracy protesters in Beijing's Tiananmen Square, saying it was the correct policy. The country's defense minister's validation of the Chinese government's brutal treatment of the protesters was a rare acknowledgement of the June 4, 1989 incident that occurred after 7 weeks of demonstrations. Students and workers were demanding democratic change and the end of corruption when government soldiers and tanks chased and killed hundreds of protesters, possibly more than 1,000, although the exact number of deaths remains unknown. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke to Orville Schell, director of U.S.-China relations at the Asia Society, and asked if other Chinese officials had talked about what happened 30 years ago in Beijing.
Well, I mean, officials have talked about it, and they have put it in the context of the need to maintain stability, as the Secretary of Defense, Wei, did in Singapore. It's not something they'd like to refer to, but in his case, he was asked a question and he replied.
Will any of this, that information or that question reach the ears of Chinese people?
I would think that that particular exchange would not.
Why do you think he decided to answer the question if he knew that the government was taking such a hard stand against dissemination of such information?
Well, I suspect what happened was that he gave a speech and then was scheduled to answer questions, and that was the first question that popped up. I don't think that he chose it, but he couldn't eschew answering it, I think, once it was posed.
All right, now, this is the 30th anniversary coming up of Tiananmen Square. Do you expect any changes whatsoever in the future from the Chinese government as to how it communicates what happened or did not?
No, I think that the Chinese Communist Party is dedicated to sort of erasing this particular incident. It was embarrassing. And it was very unsettling from the historical record to the best of their ability.
I'm seeing this in your mind as not the biggest story in the world, right?
Well, I think the story is the sort of the real tragedy of June 4th was not simply the bloodshed, but that it ended China's ability to feel comfortable with any kinds of political reform. And we are seeing the consequences of that continuing to play out today.
Do you think that Xi Jinping has healed any situation whatsoever or made it worse?
I think he tends to be more dependent on control than some of his predecessors, and I think he is more of a Leninist than either Hu Jintao or Jiang Zemin, who preceded him.
Well, inside China, online censors have scrubbed mention of the Tiananmen crackdown from social media, removing articles, comments, and even pictures. Discussions of the suppression of the protests is taboo in China, with authorities warning and rounding up activists, lawyers, and journalists each year as the anniversary approaches. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Two years have passed since President Trump announced the United States would withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord. No other country has followed the U.S. on this, and momentum to fight global warming has continued. But the world remains short of the goal set in Paris to avoid catastrophic climate change. VOA's Steve Barragona reports.
Coal mines are quiet in the hills of Appalachia. The power plants they fuel are shutting down one by one as electric utility companies switch to greener energy. At a recent coal industry conference, the outlook was grim. Kentucky's Energy and Environment Secretary, former coal executive Charles Snavely, said experts forecast coal use will keep falling.
And if we're already projecting a significant decrease over time, I think that it will probably be worse than that.
How about we give that to the miners?
Though the Trump administration has worked to weaken environmental rules, many big corporations are taking their own steps to fight global warming. Walmart, Microsoft, Toyota, and other giants have set climate goals, and they are pushing state and federal governments to act, says Allie Roberts with the corporate sustainability nonprofit Ceres.
Their ability to tackle climate change and to call on policymakers to speed up the scale of action is essential.
Climate change has moved up the agenda in Washington since the 2018 elections swept a wave of left-leaning lawmakers into office. And as Democrats campaign for the 2020 presidential election, they see an opportunity to run against Republican climate denial and inaction.
Hi, Governor. What do you have to say about climate change?
A lot.
Sanders has a far-reaching plan to address climate change.
President Trump says, bring it on.
They want to take away your car, reduce the value of your home, and put millions of Americans out of work, spend $100 trillion, which, by the way, there's no such thing as $100 trillion. You have to spend $100 trillion. And remember this, no other country except us is going to do it. That's a little problem, too.
While no other country has followed the United States out of the Paris Agreement, no country has cut its greenhouse gas emissions nearly enough to avoid what scientists say will be catastrophic global warming, says UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
And the paradox is that as things are getting worse on the ground,
political will seems to be failing.
Guterres says nations need to step up at the UN climate summit in New York in September. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
Some people in the U.S. take their pet dogs everywhere they can, and one place where they are always welcome is doga, yoga classes for dogs and humans. While the pet parents get into their yoga poses like downward-facing dog, their pups get held and petted. VOA's Deborah Block takes us to a doga class in Alexandria, Virginia, where people and their pets are having a good time.
Up overhead. Pet parents do their yoga poses as their dogs walk around and socialize. This is doga, a fun, relaxing way to connect with your pet while getting some exercise. Here at Emma Vet in Alexandria, Virginia, owner and veterinarian Veronica Jarvinen decided to start doga classes a few months ago.
Everybody giggles the whole time, and, you know, dogs roam from person to person, and I think it just brings everybody a lot of joy.
Doga was started by an American fitness coach more than 15 years ago. Some of the poses the dogs do naturally take time for the humans to learn.
You can do puppy pose, which is where your hips stay up and everything else kind of stays the same.
Ashley Stewart is a yoga instructor who decided to give teaching doga a try.
So it's definitely less focused on the human yoga practitioner and more focused on the human and the dog connecting. The dogs really start to emulate what the humans are doing. We have often accidents that we're cleaning up during the middle of the class, or dogs who are barking.
Wendy Kuo, a veterinarian in Maryland, is taking her first doga class.
I like kind of having them running around. They just are so curious and they have so much love to give, and I felt like that's what I felt when I was practicing with them.
Doga helps create a stronger bond between the pet parent and pup.
You can come to your toes to the ankle.
Mike Salinas enjoys cuddling the dogs.
All dogs want are our affection and attention. This is just an hour of they get that partnership with us. And it's perfect. It's relaxing. It's a good workout.
Beth Barrett is a college student who isn't able to get a dog right now, so she enjoys other people's four-legged friends.
I love dogs and I love yoga, so it's a perfect combination of both.
As the class comes to an end with the resting pose, both people and dogs are ready to relax.
Good job, dog.
That's your favorite.
Yeah.
Maybe it is a little crazy, but it does bring more of the peace aspect to yoga for you and the animal. It also helps that bond you create.
Deborah Block, VOA News, Alexandria, Virginia.
British star musician Elton John and the filmmakers of Rocket Man, a feature film about his path to fame, have criticized a Russian distributor for removing gay and drug abuse scenes from the movie. The artist's Russian fans were disappointed with the cuts, recognizing that LGBT community is still ostracized in the country. VOA's Latika Hoke reports.
Elton John's Russian fans flocked to an independent cinema in Moscow, hoping to see the original version of Rocket Man. But what they got was an edited movie with gay scenes as well as drug-using scenes missing.
Gay people should have the exact same rights as others, and by cutting a scene, these rights are being violated.
But not everyone was disappointed.
I can live through it. If I wanted to watch two men kissing, I would go and buy porn.
John is popular in Russia, where he first performed during the Soviet era in 1979, but he has been a vocal critic of the country's anti-gay laws. The British musician and the filmmakers have issued a statement condemning in the strongest possible terms the decision to pander to local laws and censor Rocketman for the Russian market. They said the movie is a true representation of John's extraordinary life, warts and all.
This is the film that I wanted to make. It's been in the offing for 10 years. It's been on and off so many times, but it's the film that I wanted to make. I wouldn't change one thing about it.
John is portrayed by British actor Taron Egerton, who played a love scene with Scottish actor Richard Madden.
what did it take to prepare for it? Nothing. I just formed a great friendship with a great actor, and we both knew it was going to be weird, because that's the nature of intimacy on screen, regardless of the genders involved. And we got along and did our job, and we made a scene that we think is quite beautiful.
Rocketman premiered in the United States last week with a significant box office success for an R-rated movie, which has a restricted audience. Zlatica Hoek, VOA News, Washington.
New Orleans chef and civil rights icon Leah Chase, who created the city's first white tablecloth restaurant for black patrons, broke the city's segregation laws by seating white and black customers and introduced countless tourists to Southern Louisiana Creole cooking, died Saturday at the age of 96. Chase transformed the Dookie Chase's restaurant from a sandwich shop where black patrons bought lottery tickets to a refined restaurant where tourists, athletes, musicians, and even presidents of all races dined on fare, such as jambalaya and shrimp clemencho. The restaurant and Chase's husband were both named after her father-in-law. Chase was already in her 80s when Hurricane Katrina devastated her restaurant in 2005, but there was little question regarding the restaurant's fate. She and her husband evacuated but returned and lived in a trailer next to the restaurant for months while they rebuilt. In 2015, President Barack Obama chatted with Ms. Chase during a walking tour of the city, marking the 10th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, which did ravage the city.
We just had the gumbo, but we did not have the chicken. That's my point.
Well, we got to get the chicken to the White House.
We're going to have to get the chicken to the White House.
And the mayor will see to that.
Yeah, he's going
to
make sure.
I'll bring it to you. And, but before you leave that White House, I got to send you some gumbo without hats.
You know, you're not the only one to tell us what to do.
You know what? I'm still thinking about the time I had it the last time.
The last time.
Oh. You get some more. We didn't have as much food as I wanted.
All right. That was, of course, former President Barack Obama speaking with the late Leah Chase. Chase's determination propelled her from a small-town Louisiana upbringing to a celebrated chef who authored cookbooks, appeared on cooking shows, and fed civil rights greats such as Thurgood Marshall and Martin Luther King Jr. Well into her 90s, Chase could still be found daily at the restaurant using a walker while greeting customers and supervising the kitchen. The power of food to transform a day and the desire to better her city drove her. Chase's family released a statement to news outlets Saturday night saying, "The unwavering advocate for civil liberties and believer in the spirit of New Orleans died surrounded by family." Roky Erickson, the blue-eyed, dark-haired Texan who headed the Austin-based 13th-floor Elevators, a pioneering psychedelic rock band in the 1960s, has died at the age of 71. He scored with the song "You're Gonna Miss Me," but Erickson's sinuous lead guitar and wailing vocals didn't turn him into a chart topper, but they did cement his role as a musician's musician. Erickson's death on Friday was announced by his brother on Facebook and confirmed by his agent. The cause and location of death were not revealed. In 1986, he released the album Don't Slander Me, and the 2005 documentary about him was called You're Gonna Miss Me. Listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. We thank you very much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day. When you never need it. Yeah.
This is VOA News. I'm Tom.